Thank you very much, Mr. Stewart. Of course, or should I say that this is Mr. Stewart over to your left instead? Okay. I appreciate them. I appreciate the whole family. I mean, usually when people know I'm coming, the front row is always empty. But usually the second row has a few people in it, and only these are the only ones bold enough to sit in the second row. So we appreciate it. And I also want to say how much we appreciate having a live pianist. It's really discouraging when you have a dead one. And it's so nice to have you. So I should tell you that we were at Texarkana this morning, and they said, be sure and tell you hello from the Texarkana Church. And then, of course, one of the Neff family said, tell them hello from the Neff family. Now, that's almost the same as saying hello from the Texarkana Church, isn't it? They're all there. They're all attending. They are in Nashville. That's maybe discouraging to you. Let's see. Lucretia's mother turns 91 this week. And we were planning on, it's Thursday, she turns 91. I did mention this last time I was here, and I spoke on Africa in prophecy. And we determined when she turned 90 to come twice a year at least to see her. She knows us. She recognizes us. I'm not sure she remembers the next day that we were there, but she is happy when we are there. So that makes it worthwhile that she's happy when we are there. She remembers the Sabbath. When we went back, a year ago, we were here a year ago for her 90th birthday, and I think it was then or maybe half a year before, but I think it was a year ago when Lucretius told her, well, we were at Sabbath services. And she said, well, I didn't work today. So some of you remember the Leonards, Martha Virginia Leonard and B.C. Leonard. Somebody said they didn't. I mentioned Benjamin Churchill Leonard, and somebody said, well, I didn't even know what his name was, just knew him as B.C. I was told, Lucretia said, this time we're going to have to go by and see Mrs. Pyle. We want to go by and see Mrs. Pyle. And I said the same thing. Yes, we have missed seeing her the last few times. We've got to go see Mrs. Pyle. Well, I came in, and they said that she was coming, not for services, but after services. But with all the rain, she decided perhaps this would not be a good day to come. So we still plan on going to see her. We assume she's listening, but getting out of her chair to make sure her house is it's always, I shouldn't say that, because I've never been there that her house wasn't perfect. Now maybe that will get her out of her chair. To say, ooh. We were staying with them, with the Piles, over here on campus. And I don't remember what it was for. Maybe Lucretia was at the Feast of Tabernacles. And he said, I know we stayed there a couple of Feast of Tabernacles, but I think we stayed also for YOU activities a couple of times. And anyway, he mentioned that today was their 50th wedding anniversary. And, I mean, it kind of surprised me. They, you know, nothing had happened, that nothing had been said, and they had no plans. And he said, his voice was already a little quavery, a little high at the time because of his health. And he said, well, I don't know what I'm going to do with her. And I said, well, Mr. Pyle, I bet you knew what you were going to do with her 50 years ago. And he laughed and laughed and laughed, and he finally said, yes, that was 50 years ago. Which reminds me, I mentioned this to some of the newlyweds, but not to the Hohertzes, who have been married a little over 2 weeks. I want you all to stay through the sermon. So, you newlyweds. Okay. See what they put up with in Nashville? Let me tell you about Nashville. They do better when I'm gone. We have an elder there who reminds me of the elders here. We have genuine elderly elders. And we have Mr. Bill Vernich, who's 78. I bet we have some here who are maybe a little more than that. But it reminds me of this verse that I will just read in Psalm 92. Toward the end it says, "Those who are planted in the house of the Lord shall flourish in the courts of our God. They shall still bear fruit in old age." They shall still. And what made me think of this verse was Mr. Jack Elliott. Now, I don't know how old Mr. Jack Elliott is, but it just seemed to me when I went to Ambassador College, he was already old. And I, 39 was old. Remember that? That was 1959. That I went, I was 19. So somebody 39 was really old. 90, oh, now. You weren't 39 then. Oh, that's 25. I don't know. You. Anyway, when I was here last time, I talked about Sharon Abugo. And I also talked about Favor Nwag, who Sharon Abugo was the one. Everything's going fine in Nigeria. We're not having any difficulties there, except being poor. Sharon Abugo was the one that was captured by the people who captured people for human sacrifice. And God told the demon, "You can't have this one." So, sort of like Balaam. And they put the magic gourd on her and said, "We cannot use this one at all. Take her away, take her away. We cannot touch her." All the others died, far as we know. Every other one was killed in human sacrifice that was captured with her. The also Favor, who had the lung disease and nearly died, whose sister died, Abigail. Favor's doing fine, and the whole family's doing well. So if any of you remember those two precious, sweet young ladies, everything's going well there with them. And let me think, is there something else before I start my sermon? Can't think of anything. I do have... I was asked... You know... We have men in leadership positions here who have a lot of experience, who've known each other for many years. If only they could remember each other's names. But Mr. Hagnes says, there he is, and you think, I know this man, I've known him for years, what's his name? That's when you say a man who needs no introduction. Hey, I've got the same problem. I'll be 71 this year. So, I have taken back Jackson, Tennessee. I have Nashville and Bowling Green, Nashville, Tennessee, Bowling Green, Kentucky. I used to have Jackson, Tennessee. I have it again. Small church, kind of like Texarkana. And then I've been asked to go over and help with Knoxville, Tennessee. I used to pastor Knoxville, Tennessee when United first started. I had five and then six congregations when United started. So I'm back to when United started. And Knoxville, Kingsport, and London, Kentucky. So we have some faithful elders there like we do here. and in Texarkana. And so people are doing fairly well. Oh, I wanted to mention one other thing. Now, we still haven't started the sermon here. I really appreciated the opening prayer Mr. Stolle gave and the other things that where he prayed for people that we love, that are our brothers and sisters. I did say when I went to some of the congregations I've been to, even before they split, although we assumed it was going to happen, and I said, try to remain friends. These are not, hopefully, not enemies. These are brothers and sisters. We hope that God repairs the breach. So I appreciated his very kind prayer of seeking unity and harmony. So that was nice. I don't know how many churches of God are there in the Big Sandy area now. There are at least three, right, that you have? Are there more than that? Is there a Living Church of God in the area? Yes. Somebody says no and somebody says yes. Hawkins. Okay. Well, that's close enough. That's the Big Sandy area, certainly, in Hawkins. Are you a little discouraged? It'd be hard not to be a little discouraged at some of the things. Well, I do have a sermon that's not based just on that, but it's something I felt I needed and something I've spoken on before, and I can start my stopwatch. I've set it at an hour, but don't think that will discourage me from looking past that. We've all wanted God to do some things. You know, we pray. And to me, I think when I really go to God, and this is something I truly, truly, truly want Him to do, it's when a child is sick. And I can go to Him and, you know, tell Him this is something really needs to be done. And all of us have done that when we have truly wanted God to do something. Now, we all have to pray, and we know this, Thy will be done. But how many times have you gone to God and you knew exactly what you wanted His will to be? There was no question about it. And when you got a sick child, it's difficult to say, Thy will be done. It is really difficult to say that. So there are times that often we're asking, and there are times when God does it. We pray to Him, and He does that, exactly what we have asked. Sometimes it's not His will. And in those times, it's really hard to say, Thy will be done. Very hard to say that. I'd like to talk a little bit about this, and I'll give you the title that I have given this sermon. Faith to trust God's will. Faith to trust God's will. And to trust it when we really, really don't like it. We don't like it. I've prayed for little children. Some have been healed. And some have died. It's really hard when you've prayed a long time. You know, so we've had children on the prayer list. I haven't known them, but I've known they were children. And it's pretty hard. I want to read Hebrews 11, verses 29 through 39. Now, there are some wonderful things here. And I'm not going to tell you anything today that you don't know. You know what I'm going to tell you. But it's something that we need to be reminded of. Not just because of the church, but because in our own personal lives and people that we know and love. Hebrews 11, verse 29. Now, this is a wonderful miracle that God performed. It was His will. By faith, they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. Now, I don't know where their faith was when you read that. When you read the story back there, it doesn't sound like they had a lot of faith when the Egyptians showed up, other than Moses. He seemed like the only one, although I'm sure there were others who had faith, but the rest of them were, you know, pretty much thought they were dead. But then God parted the water. I don't know, was the faith in walking through? You're walking through and you got water on both sides. That'd take a little faith to walk through and the water is there, about to close back in on you. Whereas the Egyptians attempting to do so were drowned. If I were an Egyptian, I'd say, let's have a strategic withdrawal. But it was God's will that they go in and drown. So they did. By faith, the walls of Jericho fell down after they were encircled for 7 days. By faith, the harlot Rahab did not perish with those who did not believe when she had received the spies with peace. Well, those are three wonderful examples. And what more shall I say? For the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets, who through faith subdued kingdoms, worked righteousness, obtained promises, stopped the mouths of lions. That's wonderful. I mean, you know, what wonderful miracles here. Quenched the violence of fire, escaped the edge of the sword, out of weakness were made strong, became valiant in battle, turned to flight the armies of the aliens. Women received their dead, raised to life again. All great miracles of God's will. And those are things that I'm sure made people very happy in trusting in God. And that's part of faith. But another part of faith is when God says no. Sometimes, don't you think it takes more faith to accept a no? You know, I've prayed for little children, they've been healed. And then I've prayed for little children, and they weren't. But notice this part here. And right in the middle of verse 35. And you know this. Probably heard sermonettes or sermons on the change that takes place right here in this faith chapter. And others were tortured, not accepting deliverance that they might obtain a better resurrection. I would suspect they prayed for deliverance too. But they wouldn't take it by giving up the truth. Still others had trial of mockings. Now, that's a trial I could take. And scourgings. I am such a coward when it comes to pain. Now, that would be difficult. Yes, and of chains and imprisonment. They were stoned. Do you suppose they might have prayed about it? They were sawn in two. The tradition is you've probably heard many times, that Isaiah, faithful man, was sawn in two. And I mean, here's the man that God pronounced deliverance from the Assyrians through Isaiah. Faithful man. And according to tradition, he was sawn in two. The story is that he was trying to escape by hiding in a hollow log. And he had crawled to hide. You know why he crawled into that hollow log to hide? Same reason I would have. If they were chasing after me to kill me, he was an old man, I'd be looking for some place to hide. Jesus fled when they were, you know, after him at one time. They wanted to throw him off the brow of a hill, but it said he escaped through them and got out of there. So Isaiah was trying to hide himself. And they got him, kept him in there, sawed him in half. You know, he did not want that. I'm sure he was praying to God to be delivered. And God said no. We're tempted. We're slain with the sword. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented, of whom the world was not worthy. They wandered in deserts and mountains and dens and caves of the earth. And all these, having obtained a good testimony through faith, did not receive the promise. It mentions David up there, and David certainly did have faith as far as it mentions conquering kingdoms. But he also had the faith to have patience. He had the faith that when he was nearly killed, he was nearly thrown, he had a spear thrown at him three separate times by Saul. Three separate times. And he could have killed Saul twice. But he had the faith to say no. See? To wait. It isn't what he wanted. And I want to take the example of Abraham in Genesis chapter 21 and verses 10 through 14. Here is where he had a, in a sense, a no given to him. And he accepted the no. This would have been really hard. It's easy to read through this. And I'm sure you've heard many messages on this about Abraham. Genesis 21, starting in verse 10. And it's about Hagar. And his wife, Sarah, came to him. It says, therefore she said to Abraham, cast out this bondwoman and her son. Notice the way she says it. Sarah did not say, cast out this bondwoman and your son. Her son. Hey, that was Abraham's son. Abraham loved this boy. Even when God was telling him that his heir was going to be Isaac, Abraham said to God, let Ishmael live in your sight. And God said, well, I'll make a great nation out of him because he's your son. But he wanted him to have even better than that. Let him live. But he was not going to, it was not through this son that he was going to have the covenant promise. But anyway, she said, cast out this bondwoman and her son, for the son of this bondwoman shall not be heir with my son, namely with Isaac. And I mean, here's the lady who got Abraham to go into Hagar to have a child. And she's saying, cast him out. Now, this matter, and the matter was very displeasing in Abraham's sight because of his son. He loved Ishmael. But God said to Abraham, do not let it be displeasing in your sight because of the lad or because of your bondwoman. Whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice, for in Isaac your seed shall be called. Don't you think that was pretty hard for Abraham when God said, listen to Sarah and do whatever she says? I mean, Abraham might have been thinking, but God, I'm the head of the house. But Nahor thought, no, God is the head of the house. This was not what he wanted to hear. For in Isaac your seed shall be called, yet I will also make a nation of the son of the bondwoman, because he is your seed. Now it says, whatever Sarah has said to you, listen to her voice. Well, he did something I don't think he would have done himself. But Sarah must have insisted. Because notice what it says. Abraham rose early in the morning and took, what did he give him? Gold? He had gold. Silver? He had silver. He was a wealthy man. Sheep and oxen, servants to go with her. He could have afforded that. Took bread and a skin of water, and putting it on her shoulder, he gave it and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. Now, do you think that that was his idea, bread and water? I don't think so. I think that was Sarah's idea. And yet God had said, do whatever she tells you. He gave it and the boy to Hagar and sent her away. Then she departed and wandered in the wilderness of Beersheba. And she ran out of water, and Ishmael almost died. And the angel appeared and gave her water and said, go back. And whatever, submit to your, you know, to Sarah. And she did. May have been hard, but Abraham got him back. Now in Genesis 22 is the story that we all know and has been used in countless messages of Abraham's faith. Do you suppose this is that he was happy with God's will here? I mean, there are things that have been God's will that I haven't been happy with. That it's God's will. And I know it's for the best. Faith to trust God's will, even when in this life, it is absolutely not what I would want. That's part of learning for our next life, that is when we're in God's kingdom. We will never do as Satan and go against God's will. Even if we don't understand it. Even if we do not understand it. In Genesis 22, verses 1 through 3, now it came to pass after these things that God tested Abraham. You know, the Bible talks about God testing us. And it talks about Satan tempting us. I've been asked, what's the difference between God testing and Satan tempting? Do you know in the New Testament it's the same Greek word? But here's the difference. They translated it different because it's the motivation of the two. God, when he allows a trial to come to us, wants us to pass it. He wants us to learn from it. He wants us to grow from it, to build patience and faith. Satan wants us to sin. He doesn't want us to pass it. So he's tempting us, hoping we won't pass. God tested Abraham, wanting him to pass. And he did. And said to him, Abraham, he said, here I am. And he said, take now your son, your only son Isaac. Notice he called him his only son. Not because he didn't have another son. God certainly knew that. But he was the only son through whom the covenant would pass. Whom you love. I mean, this is kind of rubbing it in. Saying, whom you love. This is a test. And go to the land of Moriah and offer him there as a burnt offering on one of the mountains of which I shall tell you. So Abraham rose early in the morning. Wow. He was quick. Think he was happy? No. Saddled his donkey. Took two of his young men with him and Isaac his son. And he split the wood for the burnt offering and arose and went to the place of which God had told him. And then in chapter 22 down in verse 16 and 17. Verse 16 says, and said, by myself I have sworn, says the Lord, because you have done this thing, and have not withheld your son, your only son, in blessing I will bless you, and in multiplying I will multiply your descendants, as the stars of heaven, and as the sand which is on the seashore, and your descendants shall possess the gate of their enemies. Now he's not saying his descendants would be as many as the sand, although it sounds like it right here, or as many as the stars of heaven. But in another place he says that if you can number the stars and the sand, then you'll be able to number your children. That's his point. It's innumerable. And we can't even get an accurate count of who all's in America. Even though they try. They may get a little close. But even if you could figure out who all were the children of Abraham that are on this earth, if you could figure that out, by the time you got to the end of counting, how many would have been born? You'd lose your count. It's not humanly possible to count them. Surely God knows. But I want you to notice something. That It was when Abraham was willing to accept something he didn't want that God gave him what he wanted. He wanted Ishmael to be there. He wanted Isaac to not die. But he was willing to accept God's will, and then God didn't require it of him. You know, I have seen that when someone is willing to say, I accept God's will, that God will give them what they wanted. Even if they're willing to say, even if I don't get it, I accept God's will, that God will give it. Now, he doesn't always do it. I almost hate to bring this up because it doesn't always work that way. Because sometimes you accept God's will and he doesn't give you what you want. Like Jesus. Jesus was willing to accept God's will. He said, you know, if it's possible, deliver this from me, from this, or I don't have to drink this cup. Nevertheless, not my will but thine. And God said, good, because you're going to die on a cross. And he did it. But there are other times when you accept God's will, and I give you an example. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They said to King Nebuchadnezzar, we're not afraid to answer you in this matter. Our God can deliver us. We'll deliver us from this fiery furnace. But if not, haven't you heard sermonettes on that before? They turned around and said, if not, we'll not bow down and worship the golden idol which you've set up. You know, they must have thought that God wasn't going to deliver them because they were grabbed, hauled to the furnace. I mean, the furnace was being heated. You could be waiting. Well, God put out the fire. Didn't put out the fire. No sign in heaven. The furnace is 7 times hotter. They're hauling them out. When did they know that God was going to deliver them? Probably not until they were in the fire. You know, about the time you're being thrown into the fire, you think, well, God didn't deliver me. But they were willing to accept God's will, and God did deliver them. And I want to give you a couple of personal examples when this has happened to me. One's kind of humorous. I haven't always had faith. But I went to Clemson University. And at Clemson, half the classes are on Saturday. And I learned about the Sabbath 2 weeks before the end of a semester in 1958 semester. And 2 weeks before, I learned about the Sabbath. And I got out of the 2 Saturday classes I had for those 2 weeks. I didn't know about lying yet, that you couldn't lie for a good purpose. So I was just learning. I was I was 18. And I went to University of South Carolina, which didn't have Saturday classes. And I transferred immediately. I'm sure it disturbed my parents, my dad was an officer in the Army, and he was living in, they were in Fort Ord, California at the time. So anyway, I transferred to University of South Carolina, and two of the classes had exams on the Sabbath. And I got Fs. And I went home. Dad was really upset. I remember him looking at the report card, and he said, it's obvious you just gave up. And I didn't tell him about the Sabbath. I figured that upset him worse. But I told him I was going to Ambassador College. And he said, I will not pay your way to some religious school. He said, but if you ever decide you want to go to a university where you can learn to have, where you can learn to earn a living, I will pay your way. That's, you know, he could afford that. He was a colonel. And he said, but I'm not going to give you any money. Well, Ambassador didn't hire me for the summer. And you couldn't get jobs very easily. And this was, you know, I went to Ambassador in 59, so this was 1960 and the summer. And so I was going home to live with my parents. And I got a ride to Big Sandy. And Dad had been transferred to Virginia, and Petersburg, Virginia. And so I was going to go stay the summer with them and then go down and stay with Grandma in South Carolina for a while during the summer. And we got into an old car. There were five of us. Somebody was coming here to Big Sandy, or we called it Gladewater back then. And there wasn't enough room for all of the luggage. Well, I put everything I had except for one suit into a large bag. I didn't have a lot of clothes. My mother, when I graduated, we went to Belk in Columbia, South Carolina, and she bought me a dark midnight blue wool suit, which really came in handy to go to Ambassador, but she felt I needed something that was there. She also got me a gray flannel suit. So I had a gray flannel suit, which was best in cold weather, and this wool suit, which was not a heavy wool suit, that was nice, cost $70. That was a lot of money in 1958. But we weren't getting things from China. And so it was made here. And it was really a quality suit for $70. Clothing was a little more expensive back then, quite a bit more expensive. I had in that bag, I left the gray flannel suit at Ambassador. But I had everything else I had in the bag. I had the army shoes. Dad got me a new pair of army shoes every year. I had my army shoes in the bag. I had all my underwear. I had that suit. I had a white sport coat, very necessary item for somebody back in the late 50s. And I had a gray cardigan. And everything I was wearing, as we were coming across the New Mexico desert, I was wearing a white t-shirt and shorts and flip-flops. Well, it was hot, no air conditioning obviously back then, and we stopped to get a six-pack of beer. There are five of us, and I went in to get it. And while I was in there, Joseph, you remember Joseph, he's in Tennessee. He reminds me of this every time I see him, which is not often. But I was in there getting it, and Joseph walked in, and he said, "Fred, the rope that was holding the luggage on top of the car came loose, and we lost one bag." I didn't say anything. I was paying, you know. And he said, "And your bag is not there." And I didn't say anything. We went back out. And they said, "Let's drive back and see if we see it." So we went back about 15. It was middle, you know, it was nighttime. And we went back about 15 minutes. I said, "We're not going to find it. If it fell off in the road, somebody stopped and got it. So let's go." So we turned around and we're singing. Okay, we had special music. Now, I do special music sort of like special education. Our Special Olympics. And we were singing, "Silhouette, silhouette, 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 dee 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 dee. Two silhouettes on the shade." Don't you see why I don't do special music now? How many of you remember that song? Come on. "Two silhouettes on the shade, two silhouettes." Some of you remember it. Big song in the late 50s. Anyway, Joseph said to me, I'm glad he did now. He said to me, "Fred, you just lost everything you own. And it doesn't even seem to bother you." We each had a beer, of course. And then since there were five of us, we just passed around the sixth beer. Getting me used to going to Africa early. And I said, "Joe..." Actually, I said Josie, because almost no one ever called him Joe. It was always Josie. I said, "Josie, God the Father saw it fall off. And Jesus Christ saw it fall off. And it didn't seem to bother them. And they're responsible to clothe me. So why should I worry? It's their problem." Now, you know, I haven't always said things like that. I wish I had, but we went to Virginia. My grandma was there. Mom talked Dad into giving me some money. $70. But besides that, he got me a pair of army shoes. And we went down to South Carolina, and we went to Belk. Nothing. We went across the street and down a little bit to another clothing store, and they had, and I remember the price of this one, a little over, it was $25 and change. They had a, it wasn't a dark midnight blue suit, it was a black suit. It was completely black, and but it was not 100% wool, it was wool polyester. But it was a nice suit. And we went up and down the street, and we went out to the Fort Jackson, and went to the PX, Post Exchange. And I did not realize it until later. That day, it never crossed my mind. Everything in that bag was replaced, except the shoes, with $70. Everything. A little different. The gray cardigan had little dark spots in it. What did you ever do with that? Anyway. I got a white sport coat. The collar was a little different. Everything that was in that bag. It never crossed my mind. I don't think it crossed my mind for several weeks that I realized everything in that bag. Everything in that bag was replaced. So I had been willing to accept God's will. Something much more dramatic. We were living in Boise, Idaho, when our first child was born. And of course, people had their babies at home back then. And we had talked to a Dr. Kellogg. He was not a doctor, medical doctor. He was a naturopath, but he was also a licensed midwife. They had a lot of midwives in Idaho, mostly for, you know, it was a very rural state. And this was 65. And a lot of people still had their babies at home in this very rural state, but not really in Boise, where we were living, the capital. But we, Lucretia went into labor, and we called him, and he came over, and also Norma, a young lady in the Boise church. She was married, but she didn't have any children. She wanted to come over and assist in the birth. And Dr. Kellogg was there, and Lucretia was on the bed, and it was a plastic sheet. And David was born. Here's this incredibly skinny little person, at least seemed to me. It was normal size, but you know how it is. You see those little tiny bony legs of a newborn baby, but just adorable, absolutely beautiful. And he said to me, "That is your wife a free bleeder?" I said, "I don't think so. I guess just normal." What I didn't realize was that the sun was coming up. It was starting to get morning, and there was legislation that was being enacted that day in the Capitol building downtown that was going to limit chiropractors and naturopaths in what they could do. And he was chosen to be one of the ones to go down there and lobby that morning. So he began pulling on the cord to get the placenta out. And the placenta did come. And she started bleeding really badly. I mean, it was so bad even Dr. Kellogg said, "This looks bad." There wouldn't have been enough time to even call an ambulance to get her down. So I went in quickly into the bathroom, a little duplex in Boise, and knelt down at the toilet, you know, put the lid down, prayed, "God, Lucretia is made for this baby. She is made physically and mentally and emotionally to take care of, feed, and handle this baby." And I said, "Please stop this bleeding." And I went back, and she was bleeding just the same amount, no change. I went back into the bathroom, and I prayed. And I mean, she was beginning to get lightheaded. And the bed was beginning to fill up with blood. And I went back and I prayed the same thing. And I went back into the bedroom. And she was still bleeding just as much. And I went, now we were really getting worried about her because she was getting very pale. Went back into the bathroom. Now, you know there's a good ending to the story because she's here. I went back in the third time and I knelt down and I said the same thing to God. This baby needs her. My family was, what would I have done? A young man with a baby in Boise, Idaho. No family. And my paycheck was $80 a week. Who would I have hired? So I went back in, prayed the same thing. I was desperate. And I got up and I just knelt back down. And I said, and I had really been upset. And I said, Father, Lucretia belongs to you. She's never belonged to me. She's yours. And you can do anything you want with her. But I'm asking, if it's your will, that you stop the blood flow right now. But I'm going to go in and hold her hand. And whatever happens, I'm going to be with Lucretia. I'm not coming back to whatever you decide. I got up, opened the door, and Norma, the young lady, said, Mr. Kellers, the blood flow just suddenly quit. Just stopped dead. Now, she had lost so much blood that she could not really get up for about 3 days without me helping her to the bathroom and such. And it was nice in one way because I got really acquainted with David. She couldn't get up. I got to give him his first bath and to change his diaper. I'd call my brother. It was early in the morning. He lived in California, so I had called him. He said, yeah, fine. 5 years older, but he was tired. And I had David, I was going to give him his bath, and I put him on our table that we had and had taken his diaper off to give him a bath, and the phone rang, and it was my brother, and all of a sudden, a fountain came up. And down on, it's the first time he had urinated. I started to run over, and I thought, who cares? You know, baby pee, nothing there. So we didn't have a crib, couldn't afford a crib. But somebody had given us a little car bed. Now, those who are young, that was just a little metal frame with cloth that people would put in a car. No protection back then, no baby seats or anything like that. But that's all we had to put him in and put it right beside my side of the bed because Lucretia couldn't have taken care of him. And put him on my side. And those of you who are parents, you understand this. I woke up at least every hour all night long to look and see if he was breathing. And if I couldn't see him breathing, I'd touch him to make him wiggle. And then I could go back to sleep for another, 30 minutes to an hour. And then I'd wake up to make sure he was still breathing. So God gave it to me. Now, he might have anyway. But it really, the bleeding didn't stop until I said, your will be done. And it's interesting. I can remember when I stood up to open the door, I was at peace. Same promise in Philippians. It says, commit it to God and the peace of God, which passes all understanding, will keep your hearts and minds. I had that peace. I was going to go in there. This lady belonged to God. If he took her, she wasn't mine. He'd have to take care of David and me. That was his problem. Let him worry about it. I was at peace. I would have been so, so lonely. And I thank God still for healing her. 47 years we've been married. I thank God for that. Our next child, who was supposed to be a girl, Elizabeth Ann, came with the wrong plumbing. We didn't even have a boy's name. And we had prayed for a boy and then prayed for a girl, and we accepted God's will. We got Freddie, and Freddie, the birth came okay. We were living in Virginia by this time, and we had a midwife. All the midwives in Virginia at that time basically were black. The only ones who were using midwives were the blacks there. They were the ones probably having the better births, in my opinion. But a nice, very heavy set, very pleasant, lovely lady was there. And another lady, Jan Stokes, became later Jan Hush, married an elder. I don't know that any of you would know her. She was, do you remember, you know Jan Hush? Isn't she an angel? She's just adorable. She was a deaconess in Richmond Church at that time. And she just took care of us like we were her own children, although we weren't young enough to be her children. But she came over for the birth. And I did tell the midwife, you know, about the bleeding when the cord had been pulled of the placenta. Now, Lucretia is a hospital phobic. I am a bit much myself. She's a little more. She just sees them as being filled with germs and knives and drugs that kill people. And so she's not real anxious to go to hospitals. But the baby came, Freddie came just fine. And then she went about an hour having contractions, but no afterbirth. And, you know, we were thinking about it. Then after about an hour, she just quit. All contractions. And after about a half hour, I went downstairs. This was a little apartment, little townhouse kind. And underneath the stairs down below was a little half bath. And I'd go in there and pray and say, God, we certainly don't want to go to a hospital. And this midwife could say, you're going to have to go to the hospital. And she would call an ambulance, and there'd be no choice. And I went back upstairs, and there was no, you know, were there any contractions? No. After a while, I'd wait, and I'd go back down, and I'd pray again. I don't know how many times I did this, but I finally said after 2 hours, after the baby had been born 2 hours earlier, and she'd gone an hour, is my recollection, with no contractions. And I did the same thing. I said to him, I mean, it hit me, Father, I've asked you, I'm going to go up and just be with Lucretia, and if we have to go to the hospital, other people do, church members have to, we can do that. Maybe you want us to learn something. And so whatever you want. I'm just going to go up and wait to see whatever you bring. But if it's your will, I'm asking that you would bring that placenta so she doesn't have to go to the hospital where she's afraid of hospitals. And I went back up, and Jan Stokes, she was Stokes still at the time, said, by the way, I talked to her the other day, called her. She's living in Virginia near her son. Jan Hush now. But Jan Stokes at the time said, Mr. Kellers, there was just one big, long contraction and the placenta just popped right out. Okay. The reason I almost hesitate to tell you that is because, remember the example of Jesus, he accepted God's will and God said, be crucified. So sometimes I've accepted God's will and it hasn't ended up being what I wanted. He has not given me what I wanted. But I bring that example, those examples to you just to show, I think that God at sometimes waits for us to really mean it when we say your will be done. He wants us to really believe it. And then, see, just like Abraham, it was when he accepted God's will with his boys, that God did not require of him what he didn't want, what Abraham didn't want. Jesus was willing to accept a no. The same is true with Paul. He had a messenger of Satan, a thorn in the flesh. He besought God three times. And God said to him, no, you're just going to have it. I mean, he said, lest I be exalted above measure. It's hard for me to think of Paul getting lifted up, you know, personal ego. But it's in the Bible. I think it interesting that Moses begged God to cross over the Jordan. And you remember what God said to Moses? He said, "Speak no more to me about this matter." Now, normally God lets us continue to beseech him, beseech him, beseech him, beseech him. And Jesus said, but you know, God had so much love and respect for Moses' attitude of humility that when Moses kept begging God, God finally said, Moses, don't even talk to me about it. Can you imagine that? You want to go over so badly and you want to ask God and he's told you, stop talking about it. Well, the same thing happened to Paul, see, didn't it? Besought him three times and God said, it doesn't matter. My strength is made perfect in weakness. And you're not going to get it. So there are times when you can ask God and you just have to accept a no. And that happens. And then the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, if we just accept it, if we accept it. Paul said in Philippians, I have learned in whatever state I am to be content. I know how to be abased. I know how to abound. Everywhere in all things I have learned both to be full and to be hungry. That is, he learned to accept a no. You know, when he was hungry, don't you think he prayed for food? I think so. And God let him go hungry. He didn't starve to death. I've learned to be full, to be hungry, to abound, to suffer need. I can do all things through Christ who strengthens me. Philippians 4. I want to turn to John 6, verse 38 through 40. Now, this sermon is not specifically about all the difficulties that we have had. 2 weeks ago, or was it last week? I'm losing track of time. If it's Tuesday, it must be Belgium, if you remember the movie. I'm living that, sort of. I was scheduled to go to Knoxville. It was last Sabbath, wasn't it? Yeah. And their pastor had just left, and this was to be their first Sabbath afterward, and I was supposed to go there, and John Labissonnière is in the area, very faithful. I don't think he's ever been a pastor or associate pastor, maybe so, but I don't think so, and he's in media, and he called me, he said, Fred, you can't come. He said, we've had to cancel services. I think it was 4 inches of snow or something, 4 or 5. I mean, and it's the same thing here. If we had 4 or 5 inches, people would be killing each other on the highway. If you had Mary Beth Phelps and I lived in New England together, and Lucretia, and 4 inches of snow, they would laugh at us for closing things down. I mean, we went to where we didn't see the ground for months, or even the highway. It would just be packed over snow and ice. 4 years I was up there, they only shut down, the governor shut down the state one weekend. That was it. It was all. Otherwise, we went. But I talked to John Labissonnière, and I said, you know, if God wanted me to be there, I'd be there. God's will be done. And John said, that's right. God's in charge. He knows what he's doing. Boy, it hurts. It hurts. I told the little Texarkana family, which is apparently all still together, I said, you're a family. Little church like this, you're a family. Big Sandy's a family. You guys have been family for years. And, you know, you're hurting. You're hurting. John 6, talking and not turning up here. And verse 38. For I have come down from heaven not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. He had things that he might have liked. But he did things exactly God's way. And we're learning God is in charge. He knows what he's doing. And he is not for losing anybody. I don't care whether I'm misled or you're misled or somebody else is misled. We're misled. Humans are misled. But being ignorant of and being misled, God can still save us. Not to do my own will, but the will of him who sent me. Now notice this. This is the will of the Father. Here is what his will really is. Here is what his will is for United Church of God, Church of God, a worldwide association. Is it Church of God, Big Sandy? Is that the title? Living Church of God. This is the will of the Father who sent me, that of all he has given me, I should lose nothing, but should raise it up at the last day. Now, he's not going to force us. We know that. And he's not going to force everybody. And this is the will, verse 40, this is the will of him who sent me. Here's what the big will is. I'm not talking about somebody being healed or a little sick girl being healed. That is certainly something we desire, but that's just for this life. That everyone who sees the Son and believes in him could give a sermon on what does it mean to believe Jesus. Doesn't mean you just say, oh, I believe in Jesus. You know that. It includes obedience. And believes in him may have everlasting life. God loves everybody in this room. Wherever others are meeting around here, God loves every one of them. And it is his will that they all have everlasting life. And if anybody has been misled or misunderstands, now we can all lose salvation. But that's going to be up to us. Not our pastor or whoever that is. May have everlasting life, and I will raise him up at the last day. And that is the acceptance of God's will. Because there are times when you and I want God to do something for us. And that's not wrong. Because a lot of things we want him to do for us are good things. I mean, we had prayer requests for Ron Dart. And we're going to pray for Ron Dart to have his memory restored. I disagree with the division. Whether it's any of them. I don't like division. You know, of course you know. There are some scriptures in the Bible that we all know, we all agree with because they're in the Bible, but then we don't always do them. And one would be where it says that if your brother sins against you, go to him, you know, just you privately, just the two of you. What percentage of the time would you say that we all do that? I mean, would you say, boy, that is really what Church of God people do. Boy, if somebody has done something to them, they don't tell their husband, they don't tell their wife, they don't tell their other friends. They don't go to the pastor. They go directly to that person. What percent of the time would you say? My experience is less than half of the time. Now, I may not know about the others, so hopefully maybe it's over half, and I just don't know about it. But I've had people come to me, Mr. Keller, so-and-so did this to me. Well, have you gone to him? No. I tell him, well, first you need to go to God and get to the place where you have forgiven him, and then pray for love and go to him because you love him, not because you're angry. Some people have been in, they've not been able to do that. They never did. But that's what we're supposed to do. So there's a verse all of us would agree with, but it is so hard to do, and I don't know what the percentage is. It's just a shot in the dark. I mean, Mr. Armstrong used to say, half of you don't get this. Well, he was wrong. Far more than half didn't get it. Another one is, if a woman has long hair, it's a glory to her. Now, the Bible doesn't say if she has short hair, it's a sin. It says it's a shame. But let me just say that there are many ladies who just don't like that verse particularly. Or maybe they like it, they agree with it, but it's not. It doesn't fit them. You know, I look good with my hair like this. So it's not a sermon on that. You want to shave your head, you know. You don't, I realize. But the other one is division. I mean, the Bible condemns division. And we all agree with it until, you know, this, that, or the other happens. And I realize, you know, if the church is teaching false, teaching Sunday, I remember years ago when this was still controlled by Worldwide Church of God over here, the campus, I went by, checking my watch, I went by and there was a Christmas tree. And just curious, drove through the campus, there it was. You know, that hurt. That really hurt. And but nobody's doing that. I mean, if there's sin and sinners, well, if we put all the sinners out, this would be such an empty place. It'd be just you. You're the only one. You'd be the only one. I wouldn't be here. You'd have to do the special music, play piano for yourself, and give yourself the sermon. I'm sure there's been sinners. We've all. How bad? I don't know. But I know that God could straighten it out and forgive. I just totally disagree with the division. Totally disagree. But your division is prophesied. It was prophesied. I gave a sermon, God's church will fall apart before the end time. Years and years ago in Little Rock, I gave it. And then one guy who was there moved over to Nashville. And later when Worldwide fell apart and he found his old notes and he said, you gave, how did you know? I said, well, it's in the Bible. So here's the promise. And then 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9 tells God's will. God's will, despite all of our troubles. I don't know. I haven't been to heaven to be a fly on the wall, to hear what's being said. God can let some bad things happen, and we just have to continue with love and pray for the separation to be ended. If God can take Nebuchadnezzar, give him the mind of a wild animal, have him out scrounging around eating grass, and then return him to his kingdom and glory, he can do anything, anything. And you know that. The Lord is not slack concerning his promise, as some count slackness, but is long-suffering toward us, not willing that any should perish. Here's his will. Now, we can thwart his will individually, but his will for you and me, Church of God Worldwide, Living Church of God, his will All these people, here they are keeping the Sabbath, keeping the holy days, keeping the Feast of Tabernacles, tithing, praying. The division's wrong. The Bible says so. I can just do my part. But here's his will. Not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. And here he's giving his will. So his will may not be to heal me when I want it or everybody I love, but his will is to save me and you. And we have to have confidence and look not to what we see. And it is, I'm not going to tell you, you should have faith and not be sad. That would be arrogance, because it also be hypocritical. Because there are things, I trust God and I put it in His hands. And wake up in the morning and the monkey's back on my back. The sadness. I have to go to God and put it in His hands and say, Father, you know, these are people I love. These are people you love. We should not be divided. We've got the Good News magazine. We've got Beyond Today on WGN. Lucretia and I watch it at 7:30 in the morning. And it's wonderful. It's, in my opinion, getting better and better. I thought the one they had on the holy days was fantastic. Here they're getting right there on WGN and preaching the holy days. And I'm thinking, here, I wonder how upset Satan is with that. You know. And then we have this division. Of course it's sad for me. Now that was not really the full purpose of the sermon, but it does sort of fit to that. And I feel very sad for what you have gone through. But you know, God's going to see you through it. God's going to see us through it. God knows what He's doing. He has allowed, just like He allowed things with Job. And it hurt. It was sad. But He saw Job through it. And He saw David through his troubles. And He saw Jesus through to His death and resurrected Him to glory. And He's going to see us through and the ones that we love and resurrect us to glory. And He's going to give us eternal life. And we will have learned not to be divisive. Satan's very innovative. Okay, sermon's over. I just want to say I appreciate United Church of God, but I do want to say that Satan's very innovative, and God has allowed it. It says he's the father of liars. I don't think the first lie he ever told was in the Garden of Eden. I think he lied to the other angels. And it says he's a murderer from the beginning. We often think of, you know, Cain and Abel. Cain killed Abel. Jesus said Satan was the murderer from the beginning. He's the one who tempted him into doing that. He's the one who betrayed Jesus. He completely entered into Judas. And when Jesus said, what you do, do quickly, he was talking to Satan. Judas was possessed by that time. Entered into him earlier that day. Satan's very innovative. He created the first division. The universe had gone on for all eternity, with no division. And Satan created division. And God is allowing us to taste the fruits of division. Because He wants us to hate it. So He has allowed the world to be divided. He even aided and abetted by giving languages. And what do we have? Well, you have divorce. My parents divorced. Do I hate divorce? Let me tell you, I hate divorce. That hurts me to this day. I've never gotten over it. My parents are both dead. But it hurts me to this day. My parents divorce. I tried to act as if it didn't hurt me for years. And finally, I just couldn't anymore and just started crying and crying. I went by to see the house that we lived in New Jersey, in West Long Branch. Went by on the way to the feast this year. We were happy in that house. I wanted to see my mom and dad, my brother, and my dog. We were happy in that house. And I sat out there looking at it, and I had such mixed feelings because I was so happy when we lived there. And I knew my parents had divorced. That's a hurt. When you have division between nations, you have war. Division is something we're learning to hate, so that we'll never, through all eternity, ever consider division. That's what we have to learn in this life. Well, that wasn't a very cheery end. God will restore us. God will restore us, and He's not going to lose anybody if He can help it. Not you, not these people that we love in these other congregations. He is not going to lose them. You and I don't see the answer, but God does. This would not have happened except God's will allowed it. And He'll see us through it, and we will be restored to everyone that God can save. In any of these congregations, we'll all be restored in love. I do, again, say I appreciate the announcements, Mr. Stolle's prayer, the announcement about Ron Dart. It shows me the love that's in this congregation. It shows me the caring. I didn't hear anybody say anything negative about any other group. Now, you may have thought a few negative things, but you didn't say them to me. And maybe you aren't. Maybe you're just filled with love. And I hope so. Once again, it's good to be with you. And that's 6 minutes more than... But my sermon was over 6 minutes ago.